Our next speaker is Michelle Chosadovsky. Michelle is the author of a book called The Globalization of Poverty. Michelle's book is at the back. He is an expert on the Balkans. Mr. Chosadovsky is a professor of economics at the University of Ottawa.
Well, I see that people are warming up. I wanted first to address the question of depleted uranium because our Minister of Defense in Parliament first said, no, we're not using it. He was asked several times. And on the 13th of April, he said, and I quote from the parliamentary record, in response to a question, will the government begin work immediately to convince NATO allies, especially the US, to cease all use of depleted uranium in Kosovo before we share in condemning more innocent civilians in radioactive poisoning? His response, the Honorable Arthur C. Eggleton, Mr. Speaker, as I indicated yesterday, no Canadian munitions are using depleted uranium. They may be used by other NATO allies, including the United States. And that matter is being looked into. This is an admission on the part of the Canadian Minister of Defense that depleted uranium is used, and he is looking into the matter. There has been no report back from him regarding this matter. We are not only dealing with the blatant violation of international law in what is described as humanitarian bombings. There is something far more disturbing beneath this military operation, because this has been an operation which has been carefully planned since the 1980s. We have evidence of this from national security documents which have been declassified. But more significantly, we have ample evidence that the NATO operation is using an organization, the KLA, the USHIKA, which has links to criminal syndicates in Turkey and Western Europe. And which is funded by the multi-billion dollar narcotics trade through the Balkans. We must understand that this is not an accidental pattern. This is something which is reminiscent of Olly North and the Iran-Contragate scandal. It is reminiscent of the laundering of drug money to finance the Afghan Mujahideen. This is a CIA-led operation in association with the Bundesnachrichtendienst of Germany, the German intelligence operation. Oliver North and the Contragate financing of the of the Nicaraguan Contras is just a dress rehearsal for what I would describe as the NATO KLA gate. What is more, and which is not well understood, although there have been numerous documented reports, is that the CIA is not only supporting a mafia-led operation, it has installed this mafia-led operation, but at the same time, it is using Islamic terrorist organizations, which are also financing this insurgency in Kosovo. Specifically, Mr. Usman bin Laden, well known and on the hit list of the CIA, is known to have co-financed this operation, alongside Western intelligence agencies. And this is again documented by police files, by intelligence reports, by numerous studies, and it has been known to governments and intelligence agencies at least since the mid-90s. We must understand that the Dayton Agreement was also a dress rehearsal for things to come. It stripped Bosnia of sovereignty. It established a colonial government. It drafted a constitution in a U.S. Air Force base. The Rambouillet Agreement is a carbon copy of many of the articles of the Dayton Agreement, but it has certain other features because it also sets the stage for the occupation of Kosovo by a force of 28,000 troops. We must understand that in the present context, prior to Rambouillet, the KLA was used by NATO and was virtually spearheaded into heading the delegation, the Kosovo delegation at Rambouillet, which incidentally was headed by Mr. Tachi, a 29-year-old freedom fighter, criminal, who incidentally is not even a citizen of Yugoslavia. Mr. Rugova, who represents the Democratic League and who had called for an end to the bombings, is considered not to be credible by NATO and Western governments on the grounds that he was manipulated. But on the other hand, what has happened in the months preceding Rambouillet, and as a means to foreclose an agreement between Rugova and the Yugoslav authorities in the months of October and November, the KLA, linked to organized crime, has become the sole voice for the Albanian ethnic majority in Kosovo. And this means that NATO, that we're not only talking about the criminalization of the KLA, we are talking about the criminalization of the NATO apparatus itself. And we are talking about, a major cover-up operation, a bit like Watergate to the nth degree. Cover-up because NATO officials and Western governments are obliged to concede the overwhelming evidence that the KLA is linked to organized crime. There have been declarations by Richard Gelbart, Chris Hill, and many others which have acknowledged this relationship. Yet, what is now happening is that, first of all, the rhetoric is, let us disarm them, but the practice is, coordinate with them through special forces which are present on the ground. These are British, American, and French special forces working directly with the KLA. And they are also Canadian troops working with the KLA, as well as trainers. So in other words, we are working with them, and they are working with us. I shouldn't say we, I mean we in the NATO sense. And in that sense, we are, in that sense, the whole operation, in fact, is one of building criminal structures which will ultimately prevail in the post-war agenda. We must understand that. What is the project of NATO for the post-conflict period? It is the installation of a narco-democracy. Because Mr. Thatcher has already been designated as Prime Minister. And the KLA has been invited to give up its weapons and become a political force in the post-war period. And this is the agenda. The statements are very clear coming from US and NATO officials, that we want to help the KLA to become civilian politicians. And in fact, I would quote here the US Republican Senate in a committee report where they use the term from terrorists to partners. The KLA are partners. Now I want to say a few things about the post-war process, or the post-conflict process. First of all, the installation of a mafia state, the enforcement of so-called free market reforms under IMF jurisdiction, the costs of the war operation will be billed to Yugoslavia, as in Iraq, under the Security Council of the United Nations. So much for the UN. But that is what is happening in Iraq, and I can assure you that that's what they're going to do. That this post-war scenario is one of debt and IMF reconstruction and destruction. What is the most recent proposal about? The one which was announced this morning, the G8. The process of establishing a ground war is stalled due to mounting opposition, but also due to a veto of the U.S. Congress. The G8, with Canada and Russia negotiating, not on behalf of a peace process, but essentially on behalf of Washington and NATO, in other words, Axworthy and Chairman Merdan, essentially what they are proposing, or what they proposed under the G8 banner, which will now be submitted to the UN Security Council, is the sending in of an occupation force of 50,000 troops. This is 22,000 more than under the Rambouillet Agreement. The Russians, Mr. Chernomyrdin, whom I wouldn't trust, they are prepared to rubber stamp this, which then would make it legal because the UN Security Council would adopt it, but we know that the UN Security Council in past operations is in effect simply a disguise for this NATO-led operation. And consequently, we as Canadians, we should oppose this type of UN disguised operation. David Orchard has taken this initiative to bring us here today, but I think we must understand that the course of history will not change unless this initiative is transformed into a mass movement of people across the land. We need to set up local level committees in schools, workplaces, parishes across Canada, so that this is on the agenda of all sectors of society. We notice that there are certain segments of our society which are notoriously absent in this debate and which remain silent. The numerous non-governmental human rights organizations, which only a few have spoken out. Where are they? They're helping NATO. Amnesty International I was a speaker at Amnesty International last week, and I was told that they are neither against or in favor of the bombings. I think at the heart of this discussion is also the legitimacy of our institutions and of our politicians, which have so blatantly violated not only the principles of international law and domestic laws, but also have embarked upon an operation which is linked up with the most powerful criminal syndicates in Western Europe. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Chasadovsky. Our next speaker is Dr. Ursula Franklin. Dr. Franklin Dr. Franklin is a longtime campaigner on issues of peace and justice. She is a retired professor of engineering, a senior fellow at Massey College at the University of Toronto, and a companion of the Order of Canada. Dr. Franklin.
I, too, am indebted to David Orchard and to my colleagues for being here tonight and to all of you who have come to listen. I want to talk about people. I want to talk in terms of people about, for a few minutes, about human security and about citizenship. Many of us, including myself, have been in this place before, not solely for academic reasons, but as citizens, just as many of us have worked together over many years, as Rosalie and I have. I think that when one begins that journey of protest as citizens, one seems to think that the governments that one struggles with are ill-informed, but basically well-intentioned. And I think Ambassador Bissett probably exemplified in his career to bring knowledge to governments where one had basically a trust that even if the poor dears were somewhat dumb and slow, they were not a bad lot. When one, however, continues this, one comes, unfortunately, to the point where one knows they are well-informed and ill-intentioned. And that's... And in many ways, that is a very sad conclusion. Because as a citizen, as we more or less abide the laws of our country, we do so on the assumption that our governments will do the same. It seems senseless for local administrations to go ballistic over a bunch of squeegee kids and then defend human rights by bombing other people. I find it incredibly depressing to entertain the thought that citizens of this and other countries need to resort to the law to make their government have the standards that they themselves day after day practice. What a sort of country is it when you have to take your own government to court so that they behave decently? So that I, to those of you who will again, as we go out, be faced with the question, what were the alternatives to situations that may on the ground be hard and suffering for those who were subjected to arbitrariness, I would say we should remember that there are alternatives. The world had won the fight against apartheid. It was slow, it was difficult, it may have been incomplete, but apartheid is genocide in slow motion, and it has been possible. And we've argued in this hall with the administration of the university about divestment, about saying a government that oppresses is illegitimate and we do not want the profits from their operation. It can be done. In this city, on this campus, last week was a formal inquiry into violations, into human rights violations in Colombia, where victims and human rights organizations, including Canadians, spoke from their own experience in what people in Colombia are going through. And evidence was gathered, and security was provided for the victims, and it will not be in vain. The tactics there are that same tactics of the Academy of the Americas, of the harassment of people in villages, by paramilitaries, where one doesn't never know who they actually are. Those things happen. And there are other ways of doing it. But they are not connected with making profits. They are not connected with providing an investment climate. They are exactly those things that Professor Shodrovsky had shown us before to be at the base of when people are crushed, to make it possible for not only an military but an economic occupation. I would like to say to you, as we go out and as I agree with that call for a mass movement, what is central and unites all of us is the need for good government. There is no such. And while we struggle at this moment to say to our government, who has given you the right to kill people? We have not. Realize that however horrible scenes we see about bombs killing, hunger kills, cutbacks kill, we are together with people all over the world, with that need, united in the need for honest, lawful, and conscientious representation that respects the means, never mind the glorious ends. We want governments that respect democratic, constructive, collaborative means, whether it's here or abroad, whether it's local or global, because as we carry in the demonstration of this horrible and unjust war a mission to our fellow citizens, the end of that struggle is our knowledge that nothing will save us except good, honest government for all. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Franklin. Our next speaker is Mary Elena Repo.